Okay, I think we're good to go here. Thanks for being here again. I want to begin a little bit differently today, and I think you'll see what I mean in just a minute, but it's best just go ahead and do it. I want you to turn to page 21 in your material. The bottom of page 20 and page 21 are entitled Additional Notes, Additional Information, which I think is invaluable. And there's really no benefit from me spending time with that because it's something that you can digest and I think glean the full intent of that information there. But I wanted to point out the bottom, the latter half of page 21, because that major event section, which is to the left side, the bottom left-hand part of that page, to me is just, it's what gives me the structure of the Bible. So here you have what, the first 9-10 books of the Bible and the major sections of those books. It doesn't teach you, but it may help you to reframe what happens in what order. My advice is don't gloss over information like that, but use it. My personal preference and my practice is I would have each one of those sections that you see there in that written in my Bible. For example, we're really in the book of Numbers. This morning we're in the book of Numbers. We're going to actually touch the book of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, not so much Judges, Ruth, and 1 Samuel, but so we're in the middle of Numbers. In my Bible, you'll see a note at the beginning of Numbers 11 that says something like the wilderness wanderings. If you read the context, you'll find that same information. But it helps me to have that kind of out there in my face so I can see it. And then I don't, when I'm looking for a verse or Sean is taking us to a passage, then I'm able to very quickly locate where I'm at, locate myself mentally where we are in the Bible. That's just a personal preference and a suggestion. But nevertheless, if it helps you, great. Do you have to have these memorized? Absolutely not. They might help you, though, as well. Okay, so that's page 21. Now, with that in mind, I'd like to back up a few pages to page 16. At the bottom of page 16, and we mentioned this last time, well, let me begin this way. Obviously, the rebellion of Israel and the fact that God required them to wander for 40 years, that was after Sinai. But when the children of Israel left Egypt and went to Sinai and then began their route to the Promised Land, what three major things happened at Sinai? I'm not thinking about the golden calf. I'm thinking about what three events did God plan to happen? Maybe events isn't the right word. What three categories? My question is vague, isn't it? Okay, law. Linda says the Ten Commandments. So one thing that God needed to do. Now think about this. You're the children of Israel, and you're millions big now. You're millions strong. And you're heading to the Promised Land. Well, before God has you enter that Promised Land, He has a couple things He wants to set up with you. One thing is law, the Ten Commandments. But it's much more than the Ten Commandments. We mentioned that last week. So that's one of them. What else had to happen? The tabernacle. Okay, not only will you have a system of law, but You need a place of worship. And so the tabernacle was set up. And there's one third piece. Yes, sir?
And I'm not sure the exact timeline, but I would say consecration to priests.
Priesthood. That is the third piece. Thank you. So those are the three things that God intended to happen at Sinai. Law, tabernacle, and the priesthood. And that took a while. In fact, I believe we mentioned last week it took about a year. Justin, I have your notebooks right here. If you want to come get them, they're...
Right.
Sir?
I would say all three of those things encompass the sanctification of the Jewish nation. This is the beginning of them being... This is a national covenant.
Okay.
He is setting apart this nation under a new dispensation.
Excellent. To build on Joel's point, okay, to sanctify this group of people. They're not just a large group of people. They're God's people. This group is different than other groups. They're special. And you know, we use that jokingly to mean a lot of things. But no, this was a group that was clearly unique from the nations around them. And so God had some things that he wanted to happen, to transpire, to prepare them, to position them, if you will, before they... entered the promised land. Now there were some interruptions. There were some things that did not go according to did not go according to God's plans, because unfortunately God is a being that allows your and my self-will to influence things, and in the case of the children of Israel, to negatively impact things. So, and that's why we have this, I don't know if intermission is the right term, but the 40 years of wilderness wanderings. Before we go further, I want to look at a few passages. Let's begin in Numbers, the 10th chapter, please. And we're going to be moving quite rapidly through several verses. We're going to even be moving books here. But in Numbers 10... And verse 11. Someone read that, please. Need a volunteer. Read loudly.
In the second year, in the second month, on the 20th day of the month, the cloud lifted from over the tabernacle of the testimony.
So here's this group of people, big group, large group of people, and the tabernacle has been built, and they're you know, encompassing the tabernacle, and we haven't really studied the pillar of cloud, the pillar of fire, and something happens at this point. And that is that God, who is demonstrated through the pillar, decides it's time to leave. These were nomads, folks. They didn't settle down anywhere. And they moved when the pillar told them it's time to move. And it's time to move. So things are done at Sinai. At this point, things are done at Sinai. And God is now ready to move them to the promised land. It doesn't matter if you place Sinai in the Sinai Peninsula or if you place it over in Midian. Remember, we talked about that a few weeks ago. It doesn't matter. They are, and everyone agrees, they are headed north and they're headed around the west side, pardon me, that's be the east side of the Dead Sea. So you picture in your mind what the Dead Sea looks like. It's long and skinny, right? And they come in from the east side, then turn west, and they're going to eventually show up at Jordan, and they're going to be looking west, and what are they going to see in front of them? What's the city they're going to see in front of them?
Jericho.
And that begins the conquest. But before that, I want to point out a few other things that have happened, which we might say are details. Rod, you keep saying this is a survey. It is a survey, but... as I'm studying for this lesson, there's just a few things I want to emphasize that we don't lose. For example, let's look at Exodus 24 and verse 9, please. So Reagan, if you're there, would you read that, please?
And Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel went up.
Okay. There are some names. And we tend to read right over the names, particularly in the genealogies. But here's... high priest and other priests, particularly the sons of the high priest that are mentioned by name in the book of Exodus. Now turn to Leviticus, the 10th chapter. And hopefully you saw in your studies of this lesson material that Leviticus is a book that talks about Levites, the priesthood, and all the different parameters and issues that relate to priests. And here in Leviticus 10, we have an interesting, a sad story, narrative. Be careful, Rod, because story implies to some people that it's a fable. These are not fables. But in Leviticus 10, something happens that's drastic. And I'm looking particularly at verse 3. What happens there? Someone read Leviticus 10 and verse 3, please. I will be sanctified and I will be honored. So your version may use those words instead. Thank you, Tom, by the way. Back up to read the first two verses. What happened that caused Moses to remind Aaron, his brother Aaron, of what God said? Someone else read the first two verses, please. Or Tom, since you're there, go ahead and read the first two verses for us, please. Thank you. Okay, now here's my paraphrase. Two of the very men that were in the presence of the Lord in a very special place, as we read just a moment ago from the book of Exodus, which I don't believe was too much earlier than Leviticus 10. So they get it. They recognize God. They recognize His presence and His magnificence and everything about Him. And just a few chapters later, it's a new book, I understand that. But in Leviticus 10, what do? They're offering, but what do they really do? They dishonor God. That's what they did. I mean, we tend to focus on the detail. Oh, they used strange fire. What's the strange fire? It doesn't matter. I don't have to explain what they did exactly, because Moses gave the explanation in verse 3. They dishonored me, says the Lord. They did not sanctify me. They did not treat me as holy. That goes back to the lesson last week, Sean's lesson last week. It's personal with God. When you and I sin, it's personal. That should remind you, hopefully, of a verse that Joseph mentioned. Remember when he was encouraged to sin? What was his response? What was his response when Potiphar's wife approached him and wanted him to act unrighteously? What was his response?
How can I do this and sin against my
God? How can I do this and sin against my God? Now, it would be a sin against her. It'd be a sin against Potiphar. It'd be maybe I don't know if it was an Egyptian moral law or not, but there's lots of ways you could have framed that. How did Joseph think of it? Sin towards God. It's personal. Nadab and Abihu, you know better. And when you offer this type of incense to me, yes, you were still offering, and it was still fire, but it dishonored God, and He would not have it. And so, as Tom read just a moment ago, God consumed them with fire. I'm not suggesting for a minute that God acts that way today. I am suggesting, and I'm suggesting strongly, that God views it the same way. Yes, ma'am.
In verse 8 and 9, there may have also been some alcohol involved in this.
Okay.
I don't know. It just seems that he brought that up.
It's interesting sometimes when you look at the context, as Linda's doing, how, well, wait a minute, why is that subject right there? There may be a connection, there may not. What I find interesting from the same context, she mentioned that alcohol might have been involved, and it might have been. What I find interesting is Aaron did not push back. He saw his two sons consumed by fire, folks. I don't care if you're the high priest or not. That makes an impact on you, doesn't it, as a parent? That has an influence. And Moses says, your children, your sons did not treat the Lord holy. Your sons did not honor God. And Aaron keeps his mouth shut, to his credit. Sir?
There were Moses' nephews too.
That's true too.
He probably has heard them too.
Good point.
It's not just Aaron.
I'm not sure if you heard that. Britt said, remember, Moses is related to these two young men, these two men as well. So, yes, Peggy, good point. And if I could build on what Peggy just said, not only that's why you're here and who I am, but this is my narrative. This is my plan. It's not yours. So Israel, the moment that you start thinking that, wow, we are honored people, and you know, there's a little bit maybe of arrogance coming out of this. They would never say that, but you know, in the back of their mind, God says, I'm the one controlling the situation. I'm the one in control. This is my plan from start to finish. So I think that's exactly what I want us to all get. Yes, sir.
Also, just you already said this, but this was not an accident, an unauthorized fire. And I tend to agree also. I don't think that verse 8 and 9 about alcohol is a coincidence. I can't prove that, but it's left field. It's very left field. But to your point also, we're talking about God's holiness, again, letting the scripture speak for him to represent him. He does not destroy the other two sons. Did not eat the wave offering in the end. And that's interesting because that was against the law at that time.
Okay.
And so what it's also showing is the carefulness of when we're studying these passages, and as you're rightly doing, God has a problem. He's always had a problem. His worship is always supposed to be holy. Now, whenever that's a high-handed sin. And so like you're saying, he may not strike you dead with fire, but he still is offended today as he was back then. Versus people, this is also the flip side of him, his mercy and his grace towards those who are not committing high-end sin. And he realized that, and even Moses and Aaron realized it, and he was grateful to them.
Absolutely, and thank you for reminding me of the balance here with grace and responsibility, accountability, because Abraham, remember, Abraham, who's a man of faults, and yet he's also credited with being a man of faith, but he had his issues as well throughout the Old Testament. Yes, absolutely. Kelly? Good point.
Christ.
Good point.
And we are now called to be those children of light. Why would we go back to that lifestyle that God called us out, that he cleansed us from? And because he loved us. Because he loved us.
What, Kelly asked, why would we go back? Because we're human. Because we would do the same thing the Jews did, the same thing as the New Testament Christians who had left Judaism. It's common. It's common to us. It's common to us to intervene when we should leave things alone. God's plan is not broken. Great comments. Thank you. Go to Deuteronomy, please. I want to go to Deuteronomy 32. I want to emphasize this point even further, and then we'll get back into the lesson. In Deuteronomy 32, in verse 48, I'd like someone to read verses 48 through 52, please. Read loudly, whoever volunteers. Can we get somebody in the back to read? Ooh, now everybody looks down. Like, oh, no, not me. Okay. Deuteronomy 32, beginning in verse 48. Yes, sir. Through the end of the chapter.
That very day the Lord spoke to Moses, go up this mountain of the Abram Mount Nebo, which is in the land of Moab, opposite Jericho, and view the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the people of Israel for a possession. And die on the mountain which you go up and be gathered to your people. As Aaron your brother died, and was gathered to his people, because you broke faith with me in the midst of the people of Israel, at the waters of Meribah Kadesh, in the wilderness of Zin. And because you did not treat me as holy in the midst of the people of Israel, for you shall see the land before you, but you shall not go there, into the land that I am giving to the people of Israel.
How unfair. Does God have a memory problem? Did God forget what Moses has done for him? You broke faith? Sir?
What exactly did Moses do for him?
What exactly did Moses do for him?
Yeah.
You mean like by leading his people out? Or?
Wait a minute. You think that was Moses?
I have no idea where you're headed.
He's the instrument of God.
Well, of course he is.
So let's not do the old me thing, okay? And I don't know if Moses did that or not. Maybe he did in Kadesh. I don't know. But bottom line is, we can't say, look at all the stuff Moses did for God. We can't say that.
Well, we can because
God
we do.
God did for Moses, period.
I think Britt and I are saying the same thing, but he's emphasizing the fact that it is all about God. It's always been about God, and God was in control even with Moses. My comments a moment ago, and I hope you appreciate the fact, I'm speaking from how might Moses have reacted. And how might you and I react sometime? Okay, now we're not going to be the direct instruments like Moses was, and certainly we're not going to have that relationship to where he guides us specifically, you know, This is the individual who spoke with God. This is the individual who saw the backside of God, because to see the front side, he would die automatically, even though he was considered a righteous man. And the Bible compliments Moses in many, many ways, his meekness and so many other things, but yet he still dishonored God. That's my point. Okay, are we good? Okay, all right. Okay. We emphasized before, we're going to continue to emphasize, you wouldn't write this book this way. Moses would be your hero. He'd be one of your heroes. And he would see them through to the promised land, because that's what happens in a story that we make up, because it always works out great, right? Well, sometimes in the interim it doesn't. All right. So as we follow this narrative, as we follow this sequence of events through these books, these Old Testament books, don't lose sight of the fact that there are these discrete stories that teach us along the way and remind us along the way. And also remember that there's oftentimes a lot of time that is included in between. And so we read of something happening, and then we turn the page to the next chapter or two, and we think it was the next week or the next day. Oftentimes, there are years involved. Now, not so much in this case, because we have a fairly good snapshot of everything that happened from Egypt to Canaan was, you know, in the matter of a few months, years, not decades, not centuries, thank you. That's the word I'm looking for, not centuries. Okay. On page 16 again, and sort of coupled with what we've been saying, another reminder. Just because you're a Levite doesn't mean everything is good with you. And some of the examples that we study, particularly in the book of Numbers, and I'm speaking now to Korah, who was another relative of Moses. I guess this would be a cousin, right? That's the relationship he would have with Moses. And he pushed back. Why? What was Korah's problem with Moses? Envy, greed, yes, conflict, because that's what we do. We learn a lot about people. We learn about how people interact, and even good people from time to time get caught up. But what was the end of Korah and his followers in Numbers 16? Remember that? What happened there? Yeah, just now you think about this. God, on one occasion, has burned up sons of the high priest, and now he opens up the ground to swallow, was it 100? 100 plus people involved with Korah? Was it 200? Okay. Okay. A lot of people. It was a lot. Pardon me? Okay. And then later, and it kind of relates into the same story, think about Jericho and Ai, how that when Jericho was plundered, no, it wasn't plundered like Egypt was. When they conquered Jericho, they were supposed to destroy everything. Remember that? That was the specific, those were the specifics from God. Sometimes he says, take it all. Take everything the Egyptians will give you. That's an important point, and they did. But when it comes to Jericho, you leave it all. Well, you're Achan, and you think about what's the big difference? It's just a wedge of gold, and it's just a Babylonian garment. And because of that, men died when they tried to take on this little bitty inconspicuous town called Ai. Again, we learn more about God. And that's what you'll find. That account is in the first couple chapters of the book of Joshua. We know these accounts. Right. Sir?
So I just find it interesting, just kind of finishing the story for us. Do you remember what happened the day after Korah was punished? The people came and said, you killed God's people. And God said, okay, the plague started to spread. And if you remember, Moses had Aaron intercede. And then what came out of that, God once again showed who his chosen leaders were, with Aaron's rod that budded, which became one of the items.
In the ark. It just amazes me, and I think it should have made all of us, that, you know, we tend to focus sometimes on the severity of God. And yeah, it's there. But so is the patience and the consistency and the sustainability. This God doesn't walk away from his people. He has considered it at times. And there's an interaction between him and Moses about, I'm just done with this group of people. And Moses intervenes for the children of Israel and is able to encourage or influence, if you will, God, to the point that God continues and stays with this court. God could have any time destroyed the children of Israel and started over. Okay. I believe that. I believe that his plan didn't necessitate it being the children of Israel unless he chose for it to be the children of Israel. Or it could have been a different part of Abraham's seed. Okay, and obviously that isn't the way it happened, so we don't know what that would be. Okay, I'm on page 18 now.
Rod,
sir? Billy?
What we touched on too is this idea that we're learning about ourselves, we're learning about God. The whole book points back to the idea of this relationship that you and God have with each other. Happen.
That's a good point. Very good point. Okay, back to the book of Numbers, and we're on page 18 now. We'll step back and try to look at the high-level narrative now. We've looked at some very specific examples within the narrative to emphasize the point about God, His holiness, sanctifying Him, honoring Him, man's relationship to Him. On page 18, this is, I think, a great summary of the book of Numbers and then Deuteronomy. And Numbers is an interesting book because the Spirit gives us the details of this group of people that are going to go in and become combatants. They're going to engage in a physical battle with the very nations. Went back in the book of Genesis when God told Abraham the immorality of the, and he lists all these groups of people, the Hittites and the Amorites and the so on, just added I-T-E-S to the end of it and you've got a name. But these groups that we don't really relate to because there's not a lot said about them. But God says their time is not yet. Their time is now. And so God says, you're going in, you're going into battle. And so he does things like have his people numbered. He does that twice. But in between is where you have that rebellion and God punishes the children of Israel. Notice, if you look at the numbers, and the numbers are on this page, that the first numbering and the second numbering, they're almost the same. So the size of Israel is about the same, even though they are 40 years later when they have arrived at the plains of Moab. The plains of Moab, which are to the east of Jordan, and they're ready to go in and start conquering. Notice halfway down the page, page 18, there are some specific chapters mentioned because these are some of those events that we tend to remember more than the others. You know, we've mentioned Korah already, the fiery serpent, Balaam's advice. Now, think about this for a moment. These are referenced in the New Testament. Doesn't it make a lot more sense in the New Testament when a verse refers to Balaam or the verse refers to this or that, that goes back to the Old Testament? Doesn't it seem to make a lot more sense than just some arbitrary thing that's thrown out there that we have no background or history of? And that's what the Bible tells us, that the Old Testament is for your and my benefit. These examples are there for a reason. Not to just fill up a Bible class for the young people. They're there for you and me as adults to glean and to digest and to think about because they are these valuable lessons. So, you have rebellions. Joel mentioned Aaron's rod budding. You have Moses disobeying God. And we read from Deuteronomy 32. And the list goes on. I do want to mention this one. How many tribes of Israel were there? How many were there? Well, there were 12 originally, right? 12, and then what happened? Joseph was divided into two, right? Okay, Manasseh and Ephraim, his two children. So now you have 13. And we may not have emphasized this, but in the last lesson, when we were talking about the tabernacle, you actually had 12 groups around the tabernacle, and the Levites are kind of inside the tabernacle or in the close proximity to it. Because they weren't treated with a location, and they were given some cities, right? They were given some land to live in, but not like the other tribes. And so here you have this group, this large group. You have heads of the group, and often mentioned by name. Oh, by the way, here's something interesting. Numbers 33. Turn to Numbers 33. These books are primarily sequential. Primarily. But then sometimes they're not exactly. Or sometimes they'll repeat something that may be in another book. Even the Gospels are like that, right? We have different accounts of the same information. But I find Numbers 33 interesting because it's almost like Moses says, okay, let's stop for a minute. And let me just recap where we've come from Egypt. And look at that chapter. That chapter's got lots of detail. That's not a chapter that I would typically want to study, because it's just place after place after place after place after place after place. And then this happened, blah, blah, blah. It's a dry history lesson. But there was benefit, particularly in the children of Israel remembering and recounting, where have you been? Where'd you come from? Why are you here? So that's Numbers 33. You have the second census at the end of the book of Numbers, Numbers 26. So who of the men, who were the two that escaped God's wrath? Joshua and Caleb, and not Moses and Aaron. Joshua and Caleb. The two spies that when the group of spies went in to check things out, they were the only two that came back with a favorable report. Thank you. Appreciate the heads up. Are you sure you're not shortening class every week? Okay. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate you. Okay. Deuteronomy is the second giving of the law. And that really is the if you digest that word, or if you, what's the word I'm looking for? The background, the origin of the word Deuteronomy, second law. That's what it means. Okay. Thank you, Britt. So here you have the children of Israel and Moses, and these are his last words, because as we've read, he's being told, okay, you go up in the mountain and you're going to die. And this is what this book is about. And then that takes us to Joshua. Picture in your mind the land of Canaan. It's kind of narrow and tall. And the children of Israel enter, and they take the central part of Canaan first. And then I believe they go after the southern part, and then I believe they go after the northern part. There's three campaigns. I may have the north and south reversed there. But that's just how God instructed them to go about taking the land of Canaan. So many stories from that very section. What I want to emphasize is halfway down the page, we looked at these same verses weeks ago. This is the second promise that God made Abraham. And it has definitely been fulfilled, because the Bible tells us it's been fulfilled. Joshua 21, let's turn there real quickly and then we'll close class. In Joshua, the 21st chapter, this is at the end of the conquest. So the Lord gave Israel, I'm in verse 43, so the Lord gave Israel all the land which he had sworn to give their fathers, and they possessed it and lived in it. And the Lord gave them rest on every side according to all that he had sworn to their fathers, and no one of their enemies stood before them. The Lord gave all their enemies into their hand. Not one of the good promises which the Lord had made to the house of Israel had failed. All came to pass. So we learn something else about God. He's dependable. When he makes a promise, even though it might be hundreds of years later, he does deliver. Okay, we're going to pick up on page 19 next time. Thank you for your comments and participation.